If you are a small business owner, I'm sure sometimes you feel like you need a marketing degree just to successfully market your business. I'm here to tell you that is not the case if you use Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning platform has powerful marketing tools to make it easy to grow your audience, engage your customers, and sell more. In just a few clicks, you can launch a campaign that is tailored to your business and goals. Maybe you're launching a new product, or releasing a newsletter, or want to tell your customers about upcoming deals. Constant Contact can help with all of that. This includes email, SMS, social media, and so much more, all designed to be easy so you can sell more, raise more, and fast-track business growth. Plus, Constant Contact's award-winning customer service is there for guidance along the way to help you with things like customer lists, templates, and follow-ups. Get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall.
If I ventured in the slipstream.
This episode of Inside Golf Podcast is brought to you by The Rabbit Hole. The Rabbit Hole is the information and data website that I use to make models, break down players, and everything in between. It is the most comprehensive and accurate golf data site out there. That I can guarantee, where you get your data from, maybe the most important aspect of your golf betting and DFS research. And we are running a free promo this week for the Byron Nelson. So you can check out The Rabbit Hole this week for free. All you've got to do is head on over to betspurtsgolf.com, code ANDYFREE. I mean, what do you got to lose? You can check out my model up there for the Byron Nelson, make your own model, get access to the best data and information that I use every week up there for free. Take advantage of it. Okay, coming up on this podcast, bringing on one of my favorite blokes, Tom Jacobs, my colleague over at Oddschecker, to talk a little Byron Nelson, a little Zurich recap, a look ahead to the PGA Championship, and so much more. Great golf chat. Feels good to be back breaking down some individual stroke play this week, even if the golf course leaves a lot to be desired. So without further ado, let's bring on Tom. All right, Tom Jacobs is here, my colleague over at Oddschecker. How you been, man? You haven't been on the podcast this year. How's your 2024 golf season going? How would you assess the state of golf as we sit here on the final day of April?
I mean, couldn't have got off to a better start with Chris Kirk winning the century. Followed that up pretty quickly with Hoshino over in the Deep World Tour. Valimaki was close in Mexico, second. So had some really good, like, long shot winners and places and things like that. But it's just been one of those where, like, had a couple of players in positions that have just fallen away. Golf, I think, has just been very difficult to predict. Like, I don't think anyone needs to be told that, right? Like, we've had, apart from when Scottie Scheffler won, it's been really difficult to work out. But that's what makes it fun. That's what I enjoy doing. The only time I didn't really enjoy it from a betting perspective, the Masters, like, killed me. Like,
yeah.
I just felt so confident going in and didn't really get anything out of it that bothered me a little bit.
Well, you either, in the last two and a half months, you either had to hit Jaeger, Akshay, Peter Malnati, or bet Scottie Scheffler at 4-1 to come up anything other than zero and outright betting over the last 2 months on the PGA Tour. I was lucky enough to hit Jaeger, but I mean, Scottie has been 4-1 or lower and won four of the last five events. With Jaeger being the only guy to clip him by one stroke, and even that one felt a little, as I mentioned, lucky, where Scottie missed a 5-footer on the final hole to not end up getting it done. 2 weeks away from the PGA Championship already. It's sneaking up on us a lot faster than I would have expected. I still almost feel like I'm battling a bit of a Masters hangover. I think the fact that the majors feel so congested this year, like, not just feel, they actually are. We're actually getting an earlier US Open as well. Like, the Masters, PGA Championship, and US Open are all coming in a 12-week stretch. I think that's actually scarier for what Scottie could potentially do, because we see players, when they're hot, just rack them up. And the fact that they're so close together in this 12-week stretch leaves me feeling a little bit terrified about Valhalla coming up in a couple of weeks.
Based on the fact that he's been second in the US Open and the PGA already in his career. So, the first argument people make is like, oh, well, yes, Scheffler's won two majors, but they come at the same golf course. But no, he's been second in the PGA Championship last year, second in the US Open. And even the one you would think maybe was a little bit more challenging for him, the Open Championship, he's finished eighth already in his career. I think the only thing that can get in the way of Scottie Scheffler is the birth of his first child, which everyone's, I'm sure there must be a Scottie Scheffler or Meredith Scheffler tracker at this point. look, it's a bit of a lady thing, but I think what's going to happen is if it happens in the next week or so, he's got a couple of weeks where it's like the Wells Fargo and the Myrtle Beach Classic or whatever.
Yeah.
He's not really going to miss a lot. And then it just depends whether he's, I don't know if anyone's got the perfect prep for majors this year. And you referenced there about it being congested. And, you know, it was always the talk of like, oh, well, they're playing terrible tournaments going into the majors for live. But like, I don't think the PGA Tour prep's that much better, right? Like, it's weird.
I would agree with you. Here's what I'll say about Valhalla. I think that this is the, well, I would group the Open, you have to group the Open Championship into this as well, just because of weather. But in terms of the actual architecture of the golf course, this major, in my opinion, is going to be a lot harder for Scotty to win than Pinehurst, which has nothing to do with the timing of the baby. I'm just talking about the pure architecture of the golf course. I was on a golf trip a couple months ago at Stream Song down in Florida, and the caddy that we got, he is a Kentucky guy. And so he went from caddying at Valhalla to caddying at Stream Song. So we were talking a lot about the golf course. I'm actually going to have him back on the podcast in the next couple of days to talk about it more. And the sense that I get from Valhalla is that it's very straightforward execution test, bomb and gouge, right? Like it's very similar to, it's a Jack Nicklaus design. Jack Nicklaus typically doesn't have as intricate and perplexing and as nuanced green complexes as you'll see at other major championship venues like Augusta and Pinehurst. Valhalla is the perfect type of golf course for a Rory McIlroy, a Bryson, a Ludwig to just bomb the ball out there 350 yards off the tee and turn their brain off and just hit the shots, right? And I think Scottie Scheffler's biggest advantage is on golf courses like Augusta and like Pinehurst, for that matter, that involve a lot, that are very cerebral, right? That are very firm, that are very fast, that involve a lot of decision-making, that involve the usage of undulation and slope and contours. And you saw how easy it was for Scottie Scheffler to separate himself from even very good golfers like Rory McIlroy and Xander Schauffele, just watching that three ball on Friday afternoon and how easy it was for Scotty to separate himself from those guys with his brain and with his decision-making. And that is Pinehurst. Like, I've spent a lot of time at Pinehurst. I played that golf course a couple of times. I went to the 2014 US Open. That golf course is firm. That golf course is fast. You got to play the ball on the ground. You're going to have to make decisions around the greens. The greens are tabletop greens. They're domes. They're steep. There's steep runoffs everywhere. There's a lot of Augusta in Pinehurst, whereas Valhalla is more turn the brain off, just execute the shots, hit the ball long and high, Torrey Pines, Oak Hill, thick rough around the greens, Muirfield Village, that kind of golf course. So to me, if Scotty wins Valhalla, a golf course where it's less at the gap between him and Ludwig, we'll say, or Bryson, we'll say, or Rory, we'll say, is less on that golf course than it would be Pinehurst after the baby. Then it's like, God, what are we doing here? I don't, if you're asking me right now, Tom, I think Scotty is not going to win Valhalla, and I think he is going to win Pinehurst. That would be my take as we sit 2 weeks out.
Yeah, and I think also, like, for all of those reasons, and the fact that just trying to win a major back-to-back is so tough, right? Like, he was so good, you know, playing the Heritage and you know, winning there after the Masters. But, like, to try and do back-to-back majors is tough. I think, just as you said, the best ball strikers tend to separate themselves when they have to. And to your point, is exactly what you've said, is that you don't necessarily have to. How do you look at the leaderboard from you know, 2014, Rory McIlroy isn't just a perfect type of person. He won it.
Yeah.
Bill there, Ricky Fowler and Henrik Stenson. It's interesting because you think about it as like, is it going to be kind of bombing garages time around? It probably is because we're, 10 years on from last time. But like, you had kind of
Stenson.
Yeah. Henrik. Like, you had some weird players, Graham Dillette in 13th, like Mark Warren was a bit of a ball striker on the DP World Tour. And there was a lot of Euro guys in the sort of 30 in Valhalla, which I wouldn't necessarily expect this time around. Like, I think the DP World Tour is struggling right at the moment. But like, if you were to ask me, what do I think about the PGA Championship at the moment in terms of players, I'd be looking at Bryson and Cam Young. Just players, I think. Bryson just came back at Augusta and played really well. Somewhere that he struggled, and Cam Young's been top 10 in the last two majors, loves majors in general, and bomb and garage sounds like a dream to him, right? So, yeah, the first player that came to my mind when you sort of spoke to me about slightly previewing the PGA Championship was, I thought Max Homer is really improving his major potentials. But is that the type of golf course for him? Is he probably better suited at Pinehurst, where it's going to be a little bit tricky? So it's definitely something to think about. I think really, if you look at it now, I'd say like Bryson and Cam Young, just people just go smash it and enjoy it would be my two sort of early looks.
The problem is, Tom, is it got, from my understanding, it got Oak Hillified, right? So like you look at the 2013 Oak Hill leaderboard and it's Duffner and Furyk too. And then they said, okay, we can't roll out these 7,200 yards in 2024. And Oak Hill got lengthened by a little over 200 or 300 yards, narrowed in a lot of spots. Valhalla got lengthened. Valhalla is going to play around 7,600 yards. Valhalla got lengthened by like at least 400 yards, right? And so that's why I worry that it's going to potentially be closer to like a maybe. I think there's going to be a lot of similarities to Oak Hill. I think this is a great Victor Hovland golf course as well. Like, I think you look at players that have performed well at Muirfield Village, right? And Muirfield Village is another Jack Nicklaus golf course that favors faders off the tee. And Muirfield Village isn't totally bomb and gouge, right? Like, Denny McCarthy almost won Muirfield Village last year. So I do think every single year, even at these 7,600 yard courses, the leaderboard isn't going to be all bombers, right? Corey Connors was in contention at Oak Hill. Brian Harman almost won 7,800 Aaron Hill's US Open. But I do think that there's going to be a little winged foot to it where they make the fairway so narrow in some spots that guys like Bryson and, you know, whatever this year's version of Matt Wolf is, maybe it's Cam Young, is probably the best guess of that, are going to have such an advantage by the fact that they can get it out there 350 yards. And the Kentucky Bluegrass Rough, if you're hitting the difference between hitting a 9-iron out of that and a 6-iron out of that is fairly tremendous. So, you know, as we sit here 14 days out, I do a December majors preview pod and I picked Bryson. And I feel good about that. I feel great about that. He very much impressed me at the Masters. I think Valhalla is a way better golf course for Bryson than Augusta was. And he still looked great at Augusta. Now, I didn't really watch much of Live Adelaide, and I know they're playing in Singapore this week. I don't know how much I care because I just don't think those golf courses are in any way applicable to what the type of test that he's going to have at Valhalla. And you may have been following this a little bit closer than I have, but I mean, the Australian golf course, firm, fast, bumpy, 6,600 yards, like that's the opposite of what I'm looking for Bryson.
Yeah, look, I think for me, the only thing I'd necessarily look at, because the biggest criticism live now, so after we've got kind of over the money and the merger and all those sort of things and the comments, right, has been like, well, okay, you've just gone there to kind of retire, everything you do in prep is terrible, et cetera, et cetera. And I actually thought Doral was decent for Augusta, right?
Like,
I thought,
yeah, long irons.
Yeah, like I was surprised people were giving it so much stick. And the only thing that really happened was, the only thing I really cared about was, how does Brooks Koepka play the week before a major? Like, if that's the only thing I was really focused on, how does John Rahm look the week before the major? Like, just from a confidence standpoint, and you know, neither of them really did anything in Augusta. Bryson seems to be the one. I mean, you've already mentioned you liked him in December, but we talk about you know, the PGA Championship from last year, Oak Hill, fourth. Talk about Winged Foot, one.
Yeah.
We talk about the fact that he's just had his best finish at Augusta. A course where I never thought he was going to be any good. I know he made, obviously, the comments that always come back to haunt him with the par 67, but apart from when he was an amateur, he's never been good there. And ever since he got away from kind of the creative aspect of his game, like, he's not been good there. So to get back to a course where he can literally just hit it, find it, and go again. Yeah, there'd be some nuances to Valhalla, of course, but, like, hasn't he won Memorial as well?
That's what I was going to add as well, is he's either won Memorial or he's played great at Memorial. It might have been before he really beefed up,
Yeah. But
that's fine because he's slimmed down a little bit more now too. And Yeah. He's, I mean, I wrote this article about Bryson in December where I wrote that it's going to be a massive year for Bryson because he figured out a way to slim down and be more healthy and comfortable. You know, he's talking about all the stomach pain he used to have in the last 2 years, and he didn't really lose any distance. He is still, when he's on, the longest driver of the golf ball on tour. I mean, right there with Rory and Cam Champ and whoever you want to throw into that, he's top five at worst. And I just think at a golf course like Valhalla, him, Ludvig, you know, the other guy too that I want to throw out, and you can shoot this one down if you want. What about Cantlay at Valhalla? The reason why I say Cantlay is he's been unbelievable at Muirfield Village. By the way, so has Rom for that matter. But I really liked what I saw from Cantlay over the past couple of weeks, starting to play. But he almost led the field in approach at Augusta, and then he played well the following week at Heritage. And to me, this is kind of like put up or shut up time for the guy. Like, if Cantlay can't play well at a major championship golf course like Valhalla, which is basically like a Muirfield Village with maybe a couple longer holes where he dominates every single year, I think you're not as serious as we maybe hope you are.
Like, I think the first thing people do is when I'm definitely guilty of it, so it might just be me, but like, when you think of a player and you go, oh, they'll pick up a major at some point, and it'll probably be the PGA Championship. That's very much a loose comment that people make about Cantlay, probably Xander a little bit, although I think he's more US Open. Victor, you know, oh, they'll pick up one eventually. Like, it does feel like that. He is playing really well. I think I would definitely be, I mean, just from this conversation, Andy, and just the sort of few minutes I thought about it before coming on, like, I'm very committed to Bryson all of a sudden.
Like, I think it's join the party. Yeah. What could go wrong?
Yeah. But I think Bryson that we're seeing right now is that he's not finished outside the top 10 in LIV except for Maya Cobra in Adelaide, where you just don't expect him to play.
Yeah, who cares?
Who cares? And then he finished his sixth at the Masters. He's got his 40 printed irons or whatever it was that he had that week that were only approved the week of or whatever. Like, the guy, people don't want to hear it, but the guy does find resolutions to everything that he kind of gets wrong, right? Like, he is really intelligent. It's not just a stick. He does know what to do. So, yeah, really commit on Bryson. I agree with Kenley. I think it is one of those, like, if you can't get around here on this type of course where you're going to be able to make birdies, you probably need to reassess. He's just been a bit disappointing this year overall, right?
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with that. I think that's fair. And that's why I think the two fascinating ones for me are Victor and Cantlay. Because when I broke down Valhalla in December, I said to myself, this is a perfect Victor Hovland golf course, Muirfield Village. This is a perfect Patrick Cantlay golf course, right? Both of those two guys are great on bent grass, have dominated at Muirfield Village. The other reason why it's a great Cantlay golf course is because you have the Zoysia fairways. Okay. And now this may be a little bit in the weeds, but if you look at some of the best places where Hovland has chipped, it's been on Zoysia fairways. Marco Simone had Zoysia. Eastlake has Zoysia. He's had a lot of success chipping on these Zoysia fairways because the ball sits up and it's just really easy to chip there. So, you know, we're going to see Hovland one time between the Masters where he shot 80 and Valhalla, and it's going to be at Quail Hollow, which I actually think is a decent prep for Valhalla, at least in the sense of you're going to get a lot of drivers and long irons. If Hovland shows me something at Quail, I think that's a pretty tasty antidote to Scheffler single bullet is like a Bryson, Hovland, Cantlay. You know, you probably can fit those three guys or a Bryson Ludwig, right? I mean, for all the, if you like Hovland, Ludwig is just feels like a better Hovland right now.
Either. Like what I thought Hovland was going to be world number one this year. Like I genuinely thought he was going to be.
We're like 6 months away removed from him being consensus, a top two or three guy in the world.
I genuinely thought he was always outperforming his ranking. I thought he was, and to be honest, like when you look at the form that he's shown this year, that on paper it looks terrible, but there's actually been some really good stuff in there as well. So I don't think he's completely lost yet. I think there's obviously been some swing changes that he hasn't been able to correct just yet. So if he, like you said, I think he's one that he does need to show form. The difficulty with that is his price will just come crashing down if he does anything.
Yeah.
So you've got that kind of difficult decision where do you bet him blindly not knowing enough in terms of form, or do you just wait and see? And I think it's probably just wait and see, right? Like, I don't think it's going to be too dramatic a drop if he has one good week. So then I'm thinking, like, everyone wants a long shot at the PGA Championship, right? Like, everyone just thinks that the PGA Championship is that long shot major. And I just, it's so difficult to pick a long shot right now.
Yeah.
Like, as much as like long shots are winning, actually picking the right one is just proving to be incredibly difficult.
Right. I actually think it's more likely I would rather pick a great player that we know is a great player in mediocre form than a long shot that's playing well, right? Yeah. Because think about the guys right behind Scotty at the Masters. Morikawa and Homa both had really serious questions surrounding their game entering Augusta, but they're also really good, right? Like when Morikawa and Homa are on, they're top 10 players in the world. And that's kind of my hope with Hovland. Is that to me, it almost feels more likely that a great player, I'd rather take a great player in so-so form than I would, you know, the hot name. But I mean, there's some like Valhalla, the name, there's like a couple of names we haven't mentioned. It's an amazing golf course for Wyndham Clark. Rom at Muirfield Village is an amazing golf course for Rom. I actually prefer Brooks at Pinehurst than I do Valhalla, but it's going to be a good one. I can't believe it's like 10 days away.
That's the ridiculous thing. Like it's just so close. I mean, is it 10 days?
No. I got that one completely wrong. I'm all off right now. I'm going to like a Bahamas for a week for a wedding next week. And I think when I get back, it becomes 10 days away. Yeah.
It's that close, right? Like you might as well consider it 10 days. It's 10 days worth of what you can study from these players, right? Like,
right.
So I guess the one name, you talk about great player in so-so form. He looks a little bit lost to even say so-so form, but like Justin Thomas is going home, loves the PGA Championship.
He loves the PGA Championship, loves Jack Nicklaus golf courses, right?
Fifth of the heritage.
Yeah.
Gained in all four departments. That's the one where I think he's currently sitting in like 46th to one, I think, on FanDuel. Like, I think he's the one where you go, do you know what? Take a chance. Because if he does anything at Quail, which he could, he's going to drop.
Would you rather bet? Last question, because we'll get into some Byron Nelson. Does Rory winning the Zurich and seeing the ball go through the hoop do anything for you?
No. I'd be more interested in that he's stung Journey at the end of it. I don't think I've ever hidden it. Like, I'm pretty down on Rory in general. I do think he's going to get a major in the next couple of years. I just don't think it's going to be Augusta. I think that he's going to win a PGA or a Open in the next couple of years. I don't think he's playing well enough. Like, I seriously don't. I don't think he's got the full package to win it. Because I don't think he's going to make, like, okay, it's an easier golf course. He knows it. He's obviously won it. But, like, I just couldn't bet him at 12 to 1.
I'm in the exact same mindset. I'm going to miss it. And I'm just comfortable missing it. And to provide some context, let regular listeners of the podcast know this, but when I went to the Masters, I followed Rory very closely on Tuesday and Wednesday. I watched him play with Ludwig on Tuesday, nine holes, the back nine. They probably shot a best ball 29, and I walked off and I said, one of those guys is going to be right there. Both of those guys look incredible, and they were playing a different game out there than even watching guys like Zalatoris and Sahith and Hovland. I watched him again play a practice round on Wednesday. I walked the front with him on Wednesday when everyone was at the par three contest. Rory was out there grinding, and he looked so darn dialed in. And walking away from those two practice rounds up close, I said to myself, like, if this guy doesn't contend, then there is some sort of boogeyman thing going on, because I watch a lot of golf. I'm very fortunate to see a lot of golf up close. I have never seen a player look so, and I watched everyone that week. I was like, Brooks didn't look very good. Hovland looked, you know, Rory looked so good in those practice rounds. And it, again, it was like, he got body switched on Thursday, and walking away from that, I said to myself, I don't care if he gained 7 strokes on approach the week before. I don't care what my eyes are telling me. If he, you know, goes out and wins Wells Fargo, which I think is a rather likely outcome, just ignore it. Just look past it for now. And if he surprises you, he surprises you. But that was such a jarring experience for me, Tom. I know, like, shocker, Rory passes the eye test. And I'm sure many people have been on this way before me of like, oh, bozo, you didn't realize that Rory looks like the best golfer in the world and doesn't equal trophies at the end of the day in majors. But like, seeing him up close, what he did to that golf course compared to other top players, and then seeing what happened to him on Thursday and Friday, it was like, there's something non-golf related that I'm just not fucking with here anymore.
But I think if he was that impressive in the practice round and he looked that good, then I would probably, the danger for you, I think, is if you've seen that, I think he could probably just do that in the PGA Championship. Like, I would have every confidence that he can do that. He just needs a lobotomy before he ever wins at Augusta. Like, there's two key problems, I think, with Rory at Augusta. One is the fact that the best chance he ever had was the first major he could have won, and he shot an 80 in the final round. Second one was he was kind of seen as a favorite despite being 3 shots shy of Patrick Reed, who knew how to defend a lead, right? And I think it was unfair how much pressure was on him that day. He then goes and has his best finish because he finishes second by shooting a final round 63 or 4, whatever it was. So there's always this increased expectation. And all he needs to do, I've said it a couple of times now, like, he just has to break 70 on Thursday and then he can have a go at it. And he's done it twice, and the 2 times he's had a chance to win. He looked for everything like he was going to do that this year, like playing well on the front 9, and then he just forgot how to do it. And it's purely Augusta. And I think it's that, the pressure, the self-imposed pressure, but I think it is also the caddy. Like, I've gone so far back and forth with him on the caddy thing. So I was very much in the camp of, like, if you had a serious caddy, you'd win a lot more.
Yeah.
And I was in the camp of Rory is only able to be who he is because he has the caddy that just lets him make his own decisions. So I then started saying that Harry Diamond was like an enabler of his talent.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've gone back on it again. Like, why can't he just do what Adam Scott does and just have a regular caddy each week and then just have Steve Williams for 4 events a year? And just have the guy, even just one. Like, I think that, I mean, Tommy Fleetwood will never come out and say that not having Finau at Augusta was a benefit, because it's like, he's basically a brother. And I don't necessarily think you can just base it on one sample size, but he had his best week at Augusta and he had a local caddy.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's so much around the nuances of Augusta of someone saying, no, don't hit that shot. Mm-hmm. Don't do that, Rory. Don't aim for that pin. Don't aim for this. Don't aim for that. Scottie Scheffler gave him such a clinic over 2 days of how to just...
I mean, the juxtaposition was so strong on Friday, Tom. Just watch that Friday afternoon round in the most difficult conditions, and you can't watch Teddy and Scotty communicate in those brutal conditions, and watch Rory and Harry. I mean, he got completely exposed.
Yeah, and I just, like, I'm never one of those people just go, like, you need to sack Harry Diamond. He doesn't need to sack Harry Diamond. Have him for the other 40 weeks of the year, just for the one time you need him or need someone else in a firmer position on a Masters. Now, I remember speaking to Billy Foster, who actually got offered Rory's bag early on in his career, and he turned it down to stay, I think, with Darren Clark or to join Darren Clark, whatever way it was, because Rory was kind of this unknown quantity at this point. So I don't know if that's always just set him back. Like, oh, look, I tried to get the best caddy given to me, and they turned me down, so I'm kind of going to just pick my own guy. Maybe that's just resonated with him for a long time. I think he's a little bit stubborn, whatever. If everyone tells him he needs a new caddy, he's just going to stick with the one he's got. I think that's the factor. I think if he just has someone guiding him around Augusta, and there is no one that would love to say he won the Masters more than Steve Williams. So if he could just speak to him for a week, then maybe it would work. But I don't know. I think he's very capable of winning another major in the next 2 years and just breaking this cycle. But it's been so long. It's been so long. Like, he actually says it himself. It's like winning the major again for the first time.
For the first time.
Like, Tiger and Phil have won majors in between his last one.
Yeah. And the other, just to put a bow on the caddy thing, I've talked about this so many times on a podcast before, so I'm not going to belabor the point. I agree with you wholeheartedly. You know, listen, you can't tell me that caddies don't matter after the amount of golf that I watch up close, particularly watching somebody like Ted Scott and Scotty and that relationship and how much trust there is in that relationship. Even watching Wyndham Clark and his caddy, John Ellis, and getting closer with some caddies, getting to talk to them, getting to know Will Zalatoris' caddy a little bit. Like, I'm not saying that if Rory had a different caddy, his career would be any different. But the way that I look at it is, you know, if the Patriots win a bunch of Super Bowls in a row, and then they don't win a Super Bowl for 10 years while Tom Brady is in his prime, you know, who knows what the issue is, right? But if you're not looking at every single part of your organization, then that's just bad management, right? Yeah. So it's like, if you're Tom Brady and you're as talented as Rory McIlroy, and you haven't won your one goal of what to do in 10 years, then you should be looking at everything. You should be looking at everything. If you're Bob Kraft and you have Tom Brady and you haven't won a Super Bowl in 10 years, are you looking at your strength and conditioning coach? Yeah, you are. Does that mean if you had a different strength and conditioning coach, you would win more Super Bowls? No, not necessarily, maybe. But if you're not looking at every aspect, it's just bad management. And who knows? Maybe Rory has examined this. Maybe he has had conversations with other people, conversations with his team, his agent, his, you know, psychology coach, his mental coach, whatever. But it just feels like Harry's his best friend and he's just being stubborn about it, where I think at this point it's negligence. I think it's really poor. I think it's just poor management.
He just doesn't, and this is why he hasn't got the caddy, is he just doesn't like being told what to do, whether it's by one individual, by the thousands that beg him to change caddy. Like, he just won't be told what to do. And that is an egotistical thing. That's probably what makes him the best player of a generation, because he fully backs himself. But like, you always hear about Mickelson and like Bones having one veto a year or whatever it was. Like, sometimes you just need to be told. Like, and as simple as that, like, Scottie Scheffler's best asset is he just lets Ted tell him what to do. He just goes and executes it. And this is not to say that Ted, like, Scottie Scheffler could have won the Masters without Ted Scott, but I think it would be a lot harder. And I just don't know why. He just doesn't, like, the fact that, like, he can't see that he can't just get rid of Harry Diamond for 4 weeks a year and just have someone else. I think the trouble is now is that, like, he's probably lost the opportunity to get anyone that he wants. Like, Billy Foster's with Bits and Love. Ted Scott's not going to leave Scheffler. So
Bones is, really, I mean, Bones is out there. I don't know if that would be the right fit, but
I don't think it would, but at least it'd be a step in the right direction, right? I just try it.
It's like, what do you have to lose? That's what I'm saying.
15 times. I have a breather from the same stress year.
Yeah.
Year. Just take Bones next year and see what happens.
Like, that's why I gave the example of like a running a football team. It's like, yeah. You know, is this the answer? I don't know. But if you don't try, like, what are you doing? You're wasting your prime. So anyway, I get dinged on this podcast for talking too much, Rory. So I don't know how we did that, but we got to, we'll move on.
We will move on. But last thing, like, do we actually think it's a great golf course for him, Augusta?
I do. I think Valhalla is a better golf course for Rory. Like, just in a vacuum, is I think Rory again is, you want him on golf courses where you can turn your brain off. You want Scotty on golf courses where turning your brain on is accentuated. And I think that would be the issue with Rory at Augusta, is it's such a cerebral golf course. But just in terms of like his ball flight and dispersion pattern and skill set, I think it's great golf. I do think it's a great golf course for him. I think he has a way better chance of, I'm not going to bet him at Valhalla. I'm going to pretend he's not in the field, but I think he has a way better chance at winning Valhalla.
Yeah. It is mental though, because like when he spoke before this week, this year, he said that if you try and shoot, I think he said something along the lines, if you try and shoot 65, you'll shoot 75. And if you shoot 72, you might shoot 68 or something along those lines, whatever numbers he gave. And I thought, you know what, this is his like awakening. He obviously realizes what he needs to do. And then he just went out and didn't do it. Like, I just don't know if he knows how to not get aggressive. And I think that's why it's like, as much as yes, he hits the driver in a perfect manner, I think he hits it a bit too high sometimes. Or like, it's just, I don't know. I have no idea. But
the thing that was so perplexing about it too is like walking the practice round with Ludvig and Rory on Tuesday, Rory was like teaching Ludvig how to play the golf course. And then Ludvig went out and did it.
Yeah. That's probably the disheartening thing for him. Probably thinks, oh, I've given him all those pointers now, and now I can't win it. But there we go. I guess that's probably too much Rory on a CJ Cup Byron Nelson week. By the way, terrible name for a tournament.
Yeah, the CJ Cup honoring Byron Nelson.
Like, how can you... CJ Cup isn't the company, is it? It's CJ Group.
Yeah.
Not the Byron Nelson by CJ, whatever it is. Like, how is it CJ Cup Byron Nelson?
They lost AT&T. Yeah. So, you know, it was AT&T Byron Nelson, and now you mix the CJ Cup and, you know, don't get me started on the golf course too. I'm not going to go into the golf course. I did a whole Sunday podcast on it, but anything big picture Byron Nelson related. And then let's talk about some guys that we like at the top of the board. I mean, Jordan Spieth is 16-1 this week. And then you have Day, Siwoo, Zalatoris. I'm skipping this group at the top, man. I think that's a, for our standards, I think that's a fairly weak top of the board that doesn't scare me as much as maybe it should.
It's done.
Connor McDavid, it's not real.
The goal of the year,
Panarin!
Part of the past, the celebrations forgotten. The history.
Vegas Golden Knights.
History. Win. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
I do too. Like, you look at on paper, like Spieth, Day, Zalatoris as a trio, and you go, okay, that they are hard to beat, but they're not right now. Like, Spieth is a little bit lost. Day's not playing his best. He's got to defend. Siwoo Kim is consistent without ever really looking like he's going to contend. And then you've got a trio of players like Scott, Norrin, and Minwoo Lee, who, whatever, will take on. One thing I did notice, Andy, is we've been at TBC Craig Ranch for 3 years now. And in that time, we've had KH Lee win it twice. He's had two top sevens at the Honda. Austin Eckroat was second here last year and won the Honda this year, or the Conference Classic this year. CT Pan second here, third, 16th and 17th for the Honda. Ryan Palmer, fifth and eighth here, playoff loser and fourth at the Honda. Adam Scott won the Honda, eighth here. And it goes on. Daniel Berger, Sam Burns, Jonathan Vegas, Charles Schwartzel, Bronson Burgoon, and Peter Malnati all got top finishes at both. I don't know why, but on the face of it, they shouldn't be good golfers.
That I was going to say, because there's water everywhere at the Honda, and this is a golf course with a pretty low miss fairway penalty.
And it's shorter, right? The only thing I can think of is like, you have decently short approaches sometimes at this golf course, and a little bit of wind at both, and maybe it's just that. But there's been so much crossover, I just couldn't ignore it. Now, luckily, it only supported the decisions I made in terms of what I picked, as opposed to made a decision for me, but it helps, I think.
The one that made the most sense to me is, I mean, outside of the other bent grass birdie fest, right? Like, you, when I think of bent grass birdie fest, I think of John Deere and Rocket Mortgage. And there's been some crossover on both of those leaderboards. I think those golf courses that allow you to wail away off the tee with reckless abandon, hit a bunch of long irons. I mean, the only real defense of this golf course is the potential for wind and the fact that it's long, right? It's over 7,400 yards, but it's all out in front of you. The fairways are wide. The green complexes are pretty flat and unnuanced. The one that I actually think it makes a lot of sense from a crossover standpoint in terms of, I don't know if we've seen it that much yet, but when I was running my model for this golf course, I noticed at the end, man, this model is like exactly like my model for Mexico, where, you know, it's wide open off the tee. You have this high plurality of long irons being really the only thing that's preventing guys from going crazy low. The wind is really the real mitigating factor in terms of preventing scoring. The greens are pretty flat. It's an easy putting course. It's an easy short game course. Again, like I mentioned, low miss fairway penalty. So I was thinking about like those Jake Knapps, Stefan Jaegers, Patrick Rogers. I feel like that type of player, driver, putter, should be pretty good here.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think Stephen Jaeger was one that I didn't go with him in the end, but I think he's being overlooked a little bit basically.
Yeah.
So good at the Heritage for a good period of time there and just seems to be improving, and that's why he won. Look, he had a bit of fortune, as we already referenced, but like, I think purely at the end of the day, he's been looked over because he won recently, simple as that. So he was the one I didn't go with, who I would be a little bit concerned if he won. Like, why didn't I just stick to my guns and go?
I have two guys that I bet in the 30s, but is there anyone that you want to mention before I give you my two names?
I bet Tom Kim. And
I first FOMO on my card, like the lone man off that I was highly considering.
So the only concern I have with Tom Kim is like, does he lose a little bit because of the distance? Like, I know that it can get long, but I think when you think about Tom Kim and what he does, like 20 under, 24 under, 24 under, whatever it is that he's won at the three times on the PGA Tour, it just plays into his hand perfectly. And look, he fell off a cliff earlier this year, but what's come back is the strokes gained approach. He's second and 14th the last two starts. We know how brilliant he was in the final round at Augusta. So I just think he's going to come good again at some point, and why not be in a birdie fest? 67, 66, 67 the last three rounds on his debut, and then finished with a 65 last year as well, finished 34. So I think the 17th and 34 says that maybe there's a couple of holes that just get a bit beyond him in terms of distance, and that might hold him back for out of four rounds, but it's exactly what he wants. And the iron play suggests that we could go back to Tom Kim now.
He's got the home bed thing going for him in Dallas as well. I like that a lot. I think distance is like a luxury here. I think that long iron play is more important. Like, it doesn't really matter if you have, you know, you're driving the ball 300 yards and you have 190 in, or driving at 330 and you have 160 in, if you're better from 190 than the other guy is from 160. And Tom Kim's a good enough long iron player that I think he can make up for some of the lack of distance. A guy that's not, two players that I bet that are not lacking in distance that for me are pure numbers plays in terms of, I think their fits on this golf course is phenomenal. My largest concern with them is, can they get over the finish line? Because they don't have the largest history of being predominant winners on the PGA Tour. But I bet Benny on and Keith Mitchell. I'll do Benny on first really quickly. I watched him at the Masters, Tom, and I was like blown away by the eye test. I cannot tell you how long and high Benny on hits his driver. Like, it was, watch his ball flight is like Rory. Like, I know the stats back this up. Benny on is top five in driving distance, but Benny on murders the ball. And, you know, can he win a birdie fest? I have my concerns about that one too. Every player in this field is imperfect. You can nitpick anything. For a guy that struggles with the putter, I mean, he almost won at Kapalua. He finished top five at Kapalua. That's another wide open, driver heavy, long iron birdie fest. He leads the field over the last 50 rounds and birdies are better gained. Benny on. I know that he kind of gave up in that final round at Heritage. I think you're getting a little bit of a price break based on just seeming to have a couple of disasters short game and putting. I still think he's hitting the ball really well right now. And then Keith Mitchell too. The addition of him turning into a great iron player, I think is going to prove massive dividends for Keith Mitchell. We always knew that he's a great driver putter. He's the quintessential bombing off the tee, can get hot with the flat stick. But the addition of turning into a great iron player as well, I think is going to be the missing piece for Keith to have a really big year. And so those two players in the 30s, from a course fit standpoint, really have my attention as like, these guys have the requisite skill set of hit the ball a mile off the tee, great long iron players, great and easy scoring conditions, can make a ton of birdies.
I'm glad you're on Keith Mitchell, because that's where I've started my sleepers article, which will be out after this on Odds Check.
Yeah.
There is some 40-1 Odds Check for him.
Ooh, there's a 40. I may have to, I was fine with a 35, but yeah, go shop around.
He's gone to 40 now. And look, I expect that to settle at 35 probably before the start. But people are going to look at Keith Mitchell exactly what you just said, in the sense of, can he win a birdie fest? Because he doesn't make the requisite putts right. And his course form here kind of suggests that, with 26th and 76th. But I just think he's such a better player now. And as you said, that iron play is just taken into the next level. And the one thing I was really encouraged about was earlier in the season, because I don't think he's made the best of what he's been doing this year. I think that's pretty fair to say. I mean,
great.
When he was at the Valspar and 54-hole leader, he finishes 17th for the final round 77. And just hasn't used the ball striking to its perfect thing. But he finished 9th at the Amex, which is not a golf event that you'd expect him to do well in, right? Finishes with a 62. And I just think sometimes players are just playing far too well from a ball striking standpoint, that eventually they're just going to overcome whatever sort of stereotype there is against them. And I think that's where we are with Keith Mitchell. And when I looked at his birdie and better percentage, I think he was 32nd in birdie average, 22nd in birdie and better percentage, 11th in proximity to the hole. So he should give himself plenty of opportunities this time around. So yeah, I mean, he's inside the top 11 for everything in terms of ball striking. So I love Keith Mitchell.
Let's move a little bit farther down. Hit me with anybody you got in that like 30 to 100 range.
So I have, this is basically where I'm living now. So Mackenzie Hughes is 45 to 1.
Yeah, seen a fair amount of Mackenzie Hughes love this morning.
Like, when I think of Mackenzie Hughes, I think of someone that grinds it out based on his short game. And he does do that. But actually, when you look at historically his kind of career, I mean, he's won two tournaments at 17 under par. So there's the first thing that you need to know. Two of his other seconds have also come at the RSM Classic. He shot a 60 in the RSM Classic, 60 in the Travelers, 62, I think, at the RSM as well. The guy just goes deep at times, and it's mainly due to his putting, right? There's no getting away from that. But he's at a little bit of distance, which is nice. He's hit his irons okay in recent weeks, but it's that putter coming back and getting hot that I'm really encouraged by. And you never want to rely on someone just making putts all the time, but if he can do it, then great. Last year, 14th he finished, but he opened with a 65. Shot 64 in round two, so he was second going into the weekend and then closed with a 65 again. So, yeah, he couldn't keep it up on the Saturday. Probably his iron play just caught up with him. But I really love what Mackenzie Hughes has been doing this season and what he'd done here last year. So he was the first in that kind of range. And then the other one, which I think has been, you know, relatively popular as well, is Seamus Power, who is just finding his way back, right? Like he was lost for a little bit, but just doing what he needs to do now to actually look like a bit of a competitor again. And yeah, I just think this is a perfect golf course for him. That kind of adds to what he's been doing over the years here. And look, he was 12th at the Heritage, really impressive week there. It looked like he was going to have a decent week. You never expect him to go quite as well as that in a loaded field. 9th, 17th, and 9th here in three starts. So do I see Seamus Power winning after a, a little bit of a sort of loss of break, potentially not, but I do think he's going to be there or thereabouts over the weekend. So I think he's worth having in. And then the final one that's really popular at the moment, Andy, for I guess good reason, is Peter Quest.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'm worried that the pendulum's starting to swing a little too far on Quest love.
Like,
yeah.
Every time it happens, you just go, So he was the final one where I was like, I don't know now. Like, it makes perfect sense. He has taken his opportunities when they've come along, but I would be absolutely fine just going Kim Mitchell and Mackenzie Hughes to start that off, and then looking at Power and Kester's as alternatives. And I've got one way down. But
I'll give you two guys in that range too quickly, and then I have one above 100 too that I'll throw out there. I really like Mav McNealy here. I like Mav McNealy on any golf course that is easier, allows you to make a bunch of putts and bomb away off the tee. This golf course isn't Pebble Beach, but there's some similarities in the sense of like the emphasis falls far more squarely on the second shot because the driving corridors are so wide. And he's played well at the Rocket Mortgage before. He's played well in Phoenix before, which is another TPC Tom Weisskopf design that Cage Lee has also been great at. I like the way he's hitting the ball. And I do think with any player in this golf tournament, you have to ask yourself the question, does this guy have the ability to gain six strokes putting and win this tournament at 2500? I do believe Mav McNealy has that. And then the other guy is, I do think Mark Hubbard's going to win one of these. He is such a consistent cut maker. So, this is maybe a much better daily fantasy play than it is an outright wager. I bet him at 70-1. From what the Zurich I did watch, it seemed like he was putting Brem on his back a little bit. And, they finished top five. He just is such a great long iron player. It's the Tom Kim corollary example that you mentioned, where he makes up for his lack of distance with the fact that he is so good with his long irons for being a shorter player. And I do believe he has that putting upside, particularly on bent grass, to take it pretty low at this golf course. So yeah, after I went Benny, Keith Mitchell, I've got Mav and Hubbard at 70-1. And then there's one 110-1 guy that I bet that we could talk about as well.
The interesting thing with Hubbard is I sort of mentioned that this is like a course where you'd be happy with a volatile guy, right? And what I mean by that is like you wouldn't necessarily need the Siwoo Kim of the world to just be 15th, 16th, 18th. You don't mind someone that's just flashed with their irons or had a good couple of weeks here or there. But the thing with Hubbard is he has these massive spikes of approach play and putting where you go, oh, wow, like he's led the field in approach or led the field in putting. But he also doesn't have this terrible, like, he always has a bit of a decent floor as well. Like, he never really has a disastrous week. So Hubbard's, I think, as you mentioned, like, pretty safe. So, yeah, I do like that. I think in a year where we've seen people like Stephen Jaeger break through, we're fine. I think Adam Schenck fits in that kind of...
I like that too. Yeah.
I thought Chan Kim was interesting, but I don't know necessarily that it's the right golf course for him.
What has he been up to recently? I was looking at, I heard his name somewhere earlier before as well. And it's like, do I need to?
I bet him at the Corrales and he finished sixth there. And that was off the back of finishing 14th at the Valero. And he'd finished eighth in Mexico as well, which you mentioned you might like earlier, and 14th for the Amex, where it's low scoring. So that was kind of what appealed to me, is that when it's been a little bit of a birdie fest, he's been there. So I kind of like that. But the one for me that, I mean, this was probably born out of the kind of weird Honda Classic corollary that I made, but David Skins is a player that just gets hot randomly.
Yeah.
It's normally through putting. He was fourth at the Honda, seventh at the Houston Open, basically all putting and around the green, which you don't want to rely on. Played well at the Zurich Classic. I think he's within three shots of the lead going to the final round with Callum Tarran last week. And then when you look, he's played here one time, Andy, and he was 38th on debut 2 years ago, but he was actually the 36-hole leader. He opened 66-63, and he wasn't playing as well as he is now. So at like 200-1. I thought David Skins, for a, you know, career performance in a field that allows him to have one, I thought was quite interesting.
My guy, similar, Lauer, Justin Lauer, who, you know, is kind of like Skins in the sense that I just think he can get absolutely unconscious on these greens. You go back over the last 3 years in bent grass putting, Mav's up there as well for what it's worth. So is Hubbard and Mitchell. Lauer, I have as the number one bent grass putter in this field over the last 3 years in average strokes per round. And, you know, eighth at the Rocket Mortgage, eighth at Barbasol, these bent grass birdie fests, third at Vedanta Vallarta, 20th at the Shriners, fourth at Corrales. So I know he doesn't pack a huge punch off the tee, but I mean, he really makes up for it with his approach, play, and putting. You know, in two appearances at TPC Craig Ranch, 46th and 43rd, made the cut both years. Not great, but he gained over four strokes on approach in both appearances. So, you know, this golf course clearly seems to fit his eye from tee to green, approaching these greens, and he can get absolutely unconscionable on these greens. He just makes a ton of birdies, gives himself a ton of opportunities. Coming off a 28th at the Zurich, where he played with Dylan Wu. Prior to that, he was fourth at Corrales, 25th at the Valero. And he's got a top five at Mexico, as I mentioned, this year as well. So like at 110-1, one of my favorite bets on the board. I'm a big, big Justin Lauer guy this week.
Yeah, I bet Lauer a first round leader at the Corrales, and he was second after round one. And what I really liked is how he stuck around. Like, he stuck around all week, right? And he's the type of player that you expect to go and shoot 64 and then shoot 72 and kind of play his way out of it. But he didn't. He went 66, 64. He actually improved from his first round. Stayed in the same position, but he was actually, you know, better scoring. Then he just stuck around all weekend. I guess the 71 on Saturday kind of says what we know about Justin Lauer at the moment, but and maybe he's that kind of safe DFS play that gets you through, and you're really happy with him if he gets in the sort of birdie streak and stuff. But as we sort of said a couple of times now, like, I think the good thing about these tournaments is it just gives people a chance to have a record week. Like, AHD just, I mean, he's won two of the three, right? But he can just get hot at any point. And these players that we've mentioned are just people that can just go low at any time. And you're not asking them to beat a lot, I don't think. That's the main thing. Like, it's not like, oh, if they get down the stretch with Jordan Spieth at the moment, they should be quaking in their boots. Like, he's just not that guy, right? And maybe Zalatoris is still, maybe Adam Scott is to a certain extent. Maybe you wouldn't want to go up against Noren, who's quite solid, but like, none of them strike fear in me right now.
No, I agree with you. I think Spieth might be hurt. I just...
Yeah, it can't be right. Well, he's got that wrist issue, right? He says it just flares up randomly. And it would make sense based on his scores. But also, I just think mentally, he just doesn't seem to be there either. Like, him and Justin Thomas just seem to just kind of check out if things go wrong, which is not in their kind of makeup. So I'm a little bit concerned. Maybe it's just, you know, things have got harder, right? Like, things have got harder for both of them since they've opened one tour, so... I guess having someone like a Scottie Scheffler you don't believe you can beat. We saw Brooke say it on Full Swing, right? Like, mentally don't think they can beat them. Maybe that's just what's happening right now.
Right. Of the top guys, I'm really bullish on Zalatoris going forward in majors. But if I had one takeaway from getting to know his caddy a little bit, is that it's majors or bust for him. And I think he's playing this week because it's very convenient for him to be in Dallas, but I was still a little confused why, because I don't presume that he's going to skip Wells Fargo next week because that's a signature event with a ton of money up top. So is Zalatoris going to be, you know, you think about some of the guys that did Masters, Heritage, Zurich, Byron, Wells into PGA? Is he going to have the PGA be a sixth start in a row and play every single week from the Masters to the PGA? I mean, he has to skip Wells Fargo. Is the logic, you know, I don't really care as much about the money. I'd just rather play in Dallas. And then, because don't they get one skip of the signature event? But is there anyone else that falls in that category of guys that played Heritage, Masters, Zurich, and now are playing Byron too? Because it's, I know Zalatoris is doing that.
I can't think of another person that's done that. But like,
Hoagie didn't play the Masters.
Did he not? There you go. So then he's not the one, right? So Yeah, I don't think it's happened. And I think the only thing I can think of with Zalatoris is like, is he just trying to trust his body? Like, can I actually get through 6 weeks? And like, if I can't, then I've got to reassess my whole schedule for going forward. I don't know. I remember speaking to Zalatoris for the podcast in 2020. And I sort of said to him, where do you see yourself in 5 years' time? And he hadn't even got to the pit. This was like, it was either the week before he won for the first time the Corn Ferry or the week after. I can't remember which one it was. I think it was the week before. I think I remember texting with him afterwards. And he said, I want to win the Masters. And then all of a sudden he's finished like second there.
Yeah, second, sixth, ninth. Yeah. He's so comfortable on that golf course.
He is so good. And he is just one of those people that I truly do believe him when he says things like that. Like, he almost has that kind of mentality of a little bit like Brooks Light, I guess, that like, oh, I'll just come here and, you know, ball strike these to death and win these kind of smaller fields and not try and, you know, birdie every single hole to try and keep up. Like, I think that's where he'll separate himself. So I'll always be more bullish on Zalatoris in a major than I would be week to week in any circumstance, even right, like in 6 weeks' time, for example. And I guess like Wyndham Clark's almost getting that play as well now, but he kind of still seems to do it week in, week out, which is, I guess, testament to where he's at with the game.
Yeah, I like Wyndham a ton at Valhalla, and I think Zalatoris would be my non-Scheffler division pick to win it at Pinehurst. I love him at Pinehurst. I think that's such a good golf course for Zalatoris. All right, Tom, any closing thoughts before we get out of here, my friend?
I don't think so. I think we covered a lot of them in the start, right? Like we covered a lot of what we wanted to do. I think this week is, I guess my closing thought is like, it's just so soon. Like we've got this Myrtle Beach next week, which I really don't know what to expect from it. I know they've got George Bryan playing on the Sponsored Assumption because he's, you know, the YouTube Byron Bros or whatever. But like, I don't know what to expect from that event. I guess there's not going to be a lot of players playing in it because of what you just said. But
we'll be focused on Quail Hollow, right? Because it's going head to head with Quail Hollow, right?
Is it playing at the same time?
Yeah, I believe so. So my understanding is it goes, let's see. Yeah. Yeah. Next week is after next week is, next week is Wells Fargo. And then we're right into Valhalla.
But we've only got one tournament left. So it's just
correct.
Yeah. I don't know. This podcast has made me reassess a lot already. the main takeaway is I'm going to go and bet Bryson now. I guess the only thing with Bryson, you don't have to rush because what's going to happen is you're going to play Liv and like
win. Well, so Liv's only playing one more time and they're playing in Singapore. Yeah. And the Singapore event is this week. And then they get a week off before Valhalla, which I haven't decided whether I like that more or less than them playing in Doral the week before the Masters. But now, whether they like it or not, they are not playing the week before the PGA, which a lot of players like. Some players like to play the week before, some don't. And I could not tell you the first thing about Sentosa. I'm going to go back and watch it because I watched Doral. I think it's just negligence on anyone's part if they're not paying attention to Liv at least before the majors. Like, at least just, you can hate the Liv product, but if you want to make money at the majors, like, at least just watch the tournament before the major and just see if you can pick up anything from the eye test. I've made that mistake in the past, not caring. And I watched Doral at least like just the replay of it. And it was pretty helpful in terms of helping me figure out who's on their A game and who isn't. So I'm going to watch Liv Singapore after the fact to see if anything jumps out at me for Valhalla. But I couldn't tell you the first thing about if that's a good prep course for those guys.
Yeah, and like, I don't think it will be. I don't think it'll be a great golf course. I don't think it'll be a great, but there's just so many players in that field who don't want to go to Singapore. South Africans and people like that will be absolutely fine because they've been doing it on the PGA Tour for years. But like, Brooks doesn't want to go to Singapore, and even Dustin Johnson, like Rahm probably doesn't want to go to Singapore, but then they probably benefit from having the week off after doing it. So I think actually, one, it's a better golf course for the Liv guys this time around anyway, but having that week off so they can go and prepare in their own way is actually pretty big.
Yeah.
And Bryson just seems like the type of person to benefit from that. So, yeah, if nothing else, people should take away from the fact that we really like Bryson PGA Championship. And hopefully in between all that, we can give you a Byron Nelson winner that kind of funds that bet for you.
All right, Tom, this was a pleasure as always. We'll do it again soon, my friend. Talk to you soon, buddy. All right, that's it for the podcast. Special thanks to Tom Jacobs. Special thanks to Run Pure Sports. Special thanks to Bet Spurts Golf. And we will be back on this podcast feed next week. No Sunday solo podcast on the Wells Fargo. I will be traveling for a wedding, but fear not, we're making it up to you next week. We will do a Wells Fargo pod on Monday, as well as an early comprehensive first look at Valhalla, site of the PGA Championship. That'll probably be out on Thursday or Friday with Steve Bamford. PGA coming up right around the corner. We're almost there. Until then, best of luck with your bets this weekend, and we will see you next time. Cheers.
If I ventured in the slipstream between the viaducts of your dream, where mobile steel rims crack and the dead center back.